Whether you're screaming from the stands or the sofa, Virgin Bet has even more for you to shout about this season. Because we're giving you a totally free bet builder on a selected football match every week this season. So get ready to make some noise. Join us and claim your bet builder free bet every week. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Use Bet Builder free bet on selected match by kickoff. Min odds evens. Max one free bet, £1 to £20. Except via pop-up. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. Bet responsibly. Gamblerware.org.
This is seismic. This is massive. And who this helps the most is the rich. This helps the big teams that are going to spend to the limit and are there to win a Stanley Cup, who see a need, are willing to go out and spend $14, $15, $20 million or whatever it may be. This will help them. Everybody, welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. A nice Wednesday afternoon, Tim. I flaked on him yesterday because the big guy was a little sick yesterday, Tim. It happens every once in a while. But how are you? You look great.
Thank you. It's funny. You don't get sick often, or at least you don't tell us. But when you get sick, you sleep the whole day. This happens like twice a year the whole time that I've known you.
Twice a year. My MO is just I feel bad in the morning. I just cancel everything. I lay in bed and sleep all day. Then I wake up that night and I feel good. And then I wake up in the morning and away we go. So it's like a 20-hour just hibernate. And it happened today too, but I'm still feeling a little under the weather this morning. So maybe I'm just getting older. You know what I mean? It is what it is. And
you're also calling in from a new spot too. You're not at the office.
No, I didn't want to go to my office. It's just questions. You know, I had to deal with stuff. So I'm staying home. I'm at my office here at my house, my bedroom. And so you might hear pianos in the background, kids interrupting. Eleanor, my third youngest, is sick. She came home from school. She was barfing at school. So it's going through the house, which is bad timing because I was supposed to leave to go to Wisconsin today with Danielle. And we are pausing that. I might leave tomorrow. And it stinks because I usually fly to my speaking events. And Danielle's like, I want to go. I like the Wisconsin area. And now she's not going. So I have to drive 7 hours. Where I could have just flown for like three. And it's like, damn, I'm going to drive there and drive back Friday. I'll leave tomorrow, I'll come back Friday. So it's just like, it's a lot. And I'm trying not to breathe through my nose, everybody, because I've been getting a lot of hate mail saying it's hard to listen to you. And I'm aware of it. I have no solutions, but I am aware of it. So I'm going to try my darndest to kind of have a clean show where I'm a mouth breather. I think that's the only solution, is just be a Neanderthal and breathe through my mouth. Speaking of Neanderthals, Tim, there's a guy running around the NHL causing havoc. Plays for the Minnesota Wild. Ryan Hartman, naughty, naughty. Playing some dirty pool, as the kids say, versus the Ottawa Senators. You saw the play. Everybody saw the play. Ryan Hartman has a face-off with Tim Stützle and doesn't even go after the puck. Just completely abandons the play. He went in there with one thing on his mind and one thing only. And he forearm drives this poor kid right into the ice. Stützle doing what he does. He's down low for the faceoff. He's prepping to win the draw. It's an offensive zone faceoff for him. He's not thinking he's going to be assaulted, which is what it was. A premeditated assault from Ryan Hartman. And he wins the draw. And lo and behold, he feels a forearm on the back of his neck, driving him into the ice tip. And this is your team, the Ottawa Senators. You love this team. You've been for him for years and years and years. This is your year. Well, they finally got things together, and Ryan Hartman goes out of his way to injure one of their best players. What are your thoughts on this play?
Yeah, you know what? I the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, man, this is not good. This it looks really, really bad. And then I saw the news the next day or 2 days later that he was suspended for 10 games for smashing Stützle's head into the ice, and he's also forfeiting $487,000 of salary. Which is a lot of money. It's a lot of money no matter who you are in the world. And so the player safety released as part of their statement with the announcement, this is why I'm kind of going with this, said Ryan Hartman contends he is attempting to use his hand to regain his balance using Stützle for support, and their fall to the ice is accidental. We disagree. He chooses to take advantage of a vulnerable player in an unacceptable fashion. So I go back and watch the video again with Hartman's defense in mind. Like, okay, from his perspective, and you know what? I kind of believe him. Like, if you watch his, I think it's his right leg swings under Stützle, and he has nothing to hang on to. And he just, we've all been in position. You lose your balance. You just grab something. And unfortunately, Stützle is down, facing down, trying to get the puck. He grabs on, they go down, Stützle's face plant. So I believe him. I don't think it was intentional. I don't think he went into that faceoff saying, I'm going to mess this guy up. We always go back to you're responsible for your body, your stick, like your positioning, all that. So I'm okay with it being a penalty. I'm even okay with it being a suspension because at the end of the day, you did take his head and grab it to the ice. But I thought 10 games was way over the top. I did not think this warranted such a lengthy suspension and such a lengthy forfeiture of salary. I don't think this was intentional. I'm okay with consequences for it, but this fell way over the top for me. What do you think?
I'm surprised. You're usually a player first guy, and anytime there's, you know, a stance to be taken, you're usually on the side of the victim. And that's not a bad thing. And I am on Stützle's side on this one. I feel like the one thing that damns Ryan Hartman is his track record. And last year, the same situation, Minnesota Winnipeg, things were getting heated. Kirill Kaprizov gets stuck by Brendan Dillon in the corner. He goes down, he's injured. He wants retribution. So what does he do? He goes out at a face-up dot at the end of a period, same situation that happened in Ottawa a couple days ago, and he doesn't even try for the draw. He just pitchforks Cole Perfetti right in the neck, not even going for the puck whatsoever. So if I'm George Parros, you have to take all those things into account. He's a repeat offender. He's known to do things. And Tim, it's the exact same scenario. The exact same scenario. End of the period. Tensions are high. Minnesota's trying to get back into the game. Foligno was trying to get at somebody. Hartman was trying to get at Hamonic all game. Nothing going. Ottawa's dominating them. He's trying to change momentum. And he saw his opportunity at the end of a period. Nobody would be watching. And he buries Stützle into the ice. So with all that outside stuff factoring in on a suspension, George Parros sees this. And you got to lay the hammer down. For once in my life, I am on board with George Parros in this 10-game suspension. I don't think it's heavy-handed. I think you have to send a message. And I like Ryan Hartman. Don't get me wrong. I did a spot on Sportsnet yesterday, Toronto Radio, and I tried to defend Ryan Hartman. I tried to say this is how he plays, but I couldn't bring myself to do it because it was a dirty play. It was not a hockey play. In my eyes, and maybe Ryan Hartman disagrees with me, he went into that face-off with the intent of either causing trouble, stirring things up, or just rattling Tim Stützle. His first priority was not to win the draw, right? Because he doesn't even go for the puck.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I think the reputation as a repeat offender, it's not a reputation, it's a fact, is a repeat offender, and that definitely works against you. Like if Jacob Trouba throws an elbow on someone and he says, oh, my arm swung up because of this or that, it's like, no, you've done this 20 times. We have video of it. If Brad Marchand gets close to someone's face and his tongue comes out and he's like, oh, it was an accident. It's like, well, yep. You do this a lot. You know what I mean? So Hartman, this is his third straight offense as a repeat offender. And he's actually, on average, faces supplementary discipline every 60 games, which is like three times every two seasons. So this adds up. And unfortunately, he's going to be out of the lineup for a little while. So I think we're waiting to see if he's going to appeal it. I don't think we've heard yet whether he's going to. And if he does, because it's so many, he does have the option. If Bettman doesn't drop it, he has the option to go third party too. So we can kind of see that this maybe drops. I could see it going down to like six or something, but 10 did feel over the top for me.
No, I don't think he appeals it. I think he just eats it. And if he does appeal it, I think Gary upholds the 10. I think it's right where you want to be. I don't know what he got for Perfetti. I'm guessing it was 2-3. So there has to be a progression of penalties. You can't just keep going one game more. You have to do something to get this player's attention. And I think that's what George Parros is doing here, where he's just basically saying, this one's 10. The next one will be half a season. You have to stop doing this. Like I'm dropping the little hammer now. The big hammer will be next. And this is kind of his last chance. That's a big number, $400,000. Like that will... That'll get his notice. That's not a small amount of change. So Ryan Hartman, it's unfortunate that's his game. You know, he plays on that edge, but there comes a point where you just have to rein it back in. And I've played with guys who have that mentality where it's like, if I'm not going 110, if I'm not in people's faces, I'm not an effective player. There's a time and a place for everything. And you, like you said, you have to control your body. And he didn't do that.
You played with Rafi Torres, right?
Oh, yeah, Tico.
Were you on his team when he had any of his major incidents?
No, I was with him in San Jose when he had an injury and he was kind of out for the whole season. But I battled with him throughout the years when he was in Vancouver and San Jose. I tried to fight him many times, but I asked him, I'm like, what were you thinking when I lined up across from you in Vancouver? Because he nailed Seabrook and I played the next game. My sole purpose was to hurt him. And I had guys on the Blackhawks telling me, hey, we'll pay your fine. Go out there and injure this guy. And sure enough, we were up by 3 or 4 at the end of the game. And it's the playoffs, Tim, so I'm not trying to put my team down and lose the game. So I had to pick my spot. So I think we're up by 3 or 4 in game 5. And I line up next to him. We're at home. Or maybe it was game 4. And I'm going to go after him. I said, I'm coming after you. And the ref sees this and he throws us both out. But I asked Tico what he thought of that. He's like, I was nervous. And I asked him, would you change what you did? He's like, absolutely not. That's how I play the game. That's why we won the series. I go out there and I run guys, and that's how I'm effective. So these guys just have this mentality where they're just programmed to hit and to play hard. And sometimes they cross the line and sometimes they hurt people. And it's unfortunate, but they will not change their ways. It's like the old adage. Old Pappy Scott used to say, zebra never changes his spots, Tim. And I don't think Ryan Hartman will get this message. I feel like he is not a one-dimensional type player, but this is who he is. And he's going to continue to toe that line, and he will get a suspension next year. He'll snap his wires across, as Steve McIntyre said, and his next one will be 15, 20, 25 games.
Yeah, so we'll see if he appeals it and if he changes his ways. It sounds like he probably won't. And maybe this was an accident. And even if it was, you know, the league still thinks that because of how it played out, it's worth 10 games. So, yeah, I don't think he's a dirty player. I think there are players – like, I think Kucherov is more dirty than him. But Kucherov puts up 200 points a year, so he can just do whatever he wants, basically. There are other players like that, so that's where we are.
I think there's a difference between being a dirty player and going out and actively trying to play dirty versus a guy playing on the line. Like, I don't think Tom Wilson's a dirty player. You know, but yeah, I think you're right. I think Kucherov is dirty. I think he goes out of his way to do things that are dirty.
Yeah.
We should make a list. The dirtiest players in the league.
And it's not, you're right. It's not Tom Wilson or even, I wouldn't even say that it's Trouba. Like, there's a guys who occasionally cross the line. It's guys that do, like Kucherov. Yeah, that would be fun. That would be a fun segment.
All right. Speaking of the big fine, Tim, from Ryan Hartman, he's going to be feeling it in his pocketbook. Well, there is some relief in sight for him. The salary cap has been announced. Not officially. There is some estimates that have been released by the NHL and the NHLPA, which is pretty strong for them to do. They're usually tight-knit with these things, but they released some estimates for the next 3 years. What are the numbers looking like, Tim?
Next season, the estimate is $95.5 million, which is a nice jump. But then we get into the big number. 2026-27 is going to be $104 million. And this is the first time that's going to reach that six-digit number. And then after that, 27-28, $113.5. So another $10 million jump almost, which is just crazy numbers. And it feels like this has to tie into what we talked about 2 weeks ago with the release on they were returning the what do you call it? The players. Escrow. Yeah. So like the league is doing really well and they're recovering from the COVID stuff faster than they expected to. First of all, let's talk about the numbers themselves. How out of sight are these? Like, were these way bigger than you would have expected?
Oh, absolutely. And especially like you mentioned, coming off of COVID where nobody knew where the league was heading and how they were going to find their footing, getting their fans back, you know, filling the seats with butts. But it's fantastic. I think it's great news. When I played, we got a 5% increase in the salary cap every single year. That was it. So when our salary cap was $72 million, we added an extra $3 or $4 million. Not a substantial jump. This is seismic. This is massive. And who this helps the most is the rich. This helps the big teams that are going to spend to the limit and are there to win a Stanley Cup, who see a need, are willing to go out and spend $14, $15, $20 million or whatever it may be. this will help them. You think this helps the small market teams, you know, the cap going up to 113 in 2 years? Do you think, you know, Nashville might spend to the cap? Maybe, but teams in the South, they're not spending to the cap. This is a big boon for the Bruins, the Leafs, the Oilers. This is a godsend for these teams where you got a guy like Connor McDavid, who you got to re-sign. He's going to take some money. Evan Bouchard, you got to spend some money. He's going to take some money. It's huge. It's absolutely huge for these teams.
What makes a good bet? At Virgin Bet, we think it's a simple bet, a responsible bet, a last-minute winner when you're down to 10 men kind of bet, with generous offers. A bet that puts sport first. Sound like your kind of bet? Then you're ready to get started. Sign up and get £20 in free bets when you bet £10 on sports. Virgin Bet, a good bet. New members, min bet settled in first 14 days, 1.5 minimum odds. Free bets valid 7 days on sports. T's and C's and exclusions apply. Bet responsibly. 18 plus, gamblerware.org.
Yeah, when this news came up, I went through Puckpedia and just kind of looked at some of the lineups at the teams who have like major contract renewals coming up in the next couple of years. And a lot of the players, I was actually kind of surprised at how many players are locked up long term. Young guys like the Jack Hughes and Braden Points and Pasternak's of the world. But there are a lot of like elite players that we've talked about, obviously, who are just licking their lips at the idea of this. Matthews, McDavid, Rantanen, Kaprizov. All these guys are going to be UFAs in the next two to three years. And this is huge for them because I think we talked about this. When there's a salary cap increase, it impacts everyone, obviously. Everyone gets some kind of bump out of this, but it really impacts the top, you know, three, four players on each team, right? Like most of that money is going to the richest players. It's not the average Joe jumping up from $4 million to $7 million. It's McDavid going from 12 to 14 or 13 to 15 or something. So I think we're going to see a lot of the richest players. And do you think this impacts what we call the middle class of the NHL at all? Or is it really going to the top guys?
Yeah, you see this every negotiation period, every salary cap increase, even if there's not. There's a percentage that GMs pay to the top guys. And then they fill up the roster with, you know, $2, $3 million contracts. It is what it is. You have to secure the high-end guys. And when there's more money on the table, if I'm a Connor McDavid, he's aligned this perfectly to him. I think he has 2 years left on his deal. He's going to hit the big salary cap, $113 million. He's going to look at the numbers and go, well, I want 20% of the cap, or I want 15% of the cap, whatever that number is. So he will garner $17 million, $18 million, I think, in a couple of years. That seems crazy to talk about, but that's where we're headed. If he's making 12.5 and the salary cap when he signed was 82, and that's what, 12, 15% of the cap, I mean, he's still worth it when the salary cap rises. But to answer your question, yeah, there's no secure middle class. I think you either get bumped down to league minimum, 1 million, 2 million, or you make that jump to the next tier of superstar, star money. And then the middle ground is pretty slim. There's a few guys that live there, but for the most part, you have your elite top five guys on the team. A few guys live in the middle class, and then there's a big swath of guys making $1-2 million or less. And that's just how it always is.
Yeah. The last thing I'll point out about this is that it really benefits the teams, like I said, that already have their stars locked up to all of a sudden, like in deals that we thought were expensive at the time, like a year or two ago, now look so team friendly.
Yeah.
And guys that were probably overpaid based on the $82 million number are going to be way underpaid compared to what their peers are going to make. Some of them who aren't even as good as them, but they're locked up for 4, 5, 6 more years at $9.5 million.
Hence the issue in Colorado where the GM is stuck on the point that nobody can make more than McKinnon. Well, Rantanen looks at his comparables. He looks at guys making, you know, money around the league saying, no, I should make $11, $12, $13 million. That's what guys who do what I do make. And so if you're a GM and you're sitting there looking at your books and you say, oh gosh, no one can make more than McKinnon. He's our best player. And then, oh, Makar is our second best player. You can't make more than him. You're not going to do well. It's going to be a tough sledding for you. The team that lines up nicely for this is the Minnesota Wild. I'm telling you around, you got Brock Faber, you got Matt Boldy, you got Kirill Kaprizov locked up for not a lot of money for a long term. And they're getting what, $14 million back after this season. Then you add on another 14, 15 million over the next 2 years. So they potentially have $40 million to spend, if not more, Tim, in the next few years to just round out this team that already has a super solid base.
Well, Kaprizov's contract expires after next season. He's making nine now, so he's going to be one of the ones that's going to be he's going to be asking for 15 in a, you know, a year and a half, but he'll be worth it, and they'll have the money to spend. So yeah, you're right. That does impact those teams. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see how this negotiates, because it's going to impact things as soon as this summer. Even though there's not going to be a huge jump compared to what's coming, it's going to start happening right away. The impact, the implications of that.
And then we'll see if this is true, because they've thrown these projections around year after year. Right after COVID, they had the pie in the sky, and nothing really came to fruition. Right? It was just push it down the road, push it down the road. So will they get there? Maybe it's optimistic to say in 3 years, 2 years, we're going to jump the salary cap by 20 some million dollars. That's 25%, if not more, of the current salary cap. Like, that's a big number. So we'll see if the NHL is true to their word, if they're just kind of throwing this number out there and going, oh yeah, everything's going great, and actually it's going to be 100 million for the next 2 years, and they're just being jerks.
Which would still be great. But yeah, I guess that kind of brings the question, is why would they release this information? It's not official, but like, this is coming from official sources. So what's the benefit or the strategy of releasing these numbers ahead of time?
I don't know. I have no idea. Just to maybe get the word out that the league's doing well. I don't know what benefit comes from this. Maybe there's sponsors that want to make sure that people are watching, but they have those analytics on the side. So I don't know. Whatever it is, it's good for the league. It's good for us. And the players love it. More money in the system is more money for players to get cashola in their banks, and Ryan Hartman needs it in a bad way.
All right, let's move on to some we're kind of a quick hits here, but there's a lot of them, so it'll take a little bit of time. But a couple of injuries here. Seattle announced that Yanni Gourde will be out to 5 to 7 weeks after having a sports hernia surgery at the end of last week. That means he's a pending UFA, so he would have been probably a trade chip that might be that teams were calling about. Obviously, he won a cup in Tampa. He's a good bottom six forward. He's tough to play against. He's 32, 33 now, which I was kind of surprised about. But he won't be able to play likely before that March 7th trade deadline. So I don't know if you still inquire about a bottom six player who's injured, even if you think you can help him, but we'll see if he's healthy enough and whether teams are still calling on him.
Yeah, he'll get traded. He's got the intangibles for what he did in Tampa Bay, for how good he's been in Seattle. There's a good chance he get traded, even if he hasn't played. You know, he'll go and make a difference on a Stanley Cup for sure.
Another injury here: Kirill Marchenko broke his jaw sitting on the bench, hit by a puck. He had surgery on his face, metal plates and screws in his jaw, just brutal. several broken bones. No timetable yet, but They had this decision on whether they wire it shut or not. I think they opted not to, but he wanted to play in this big stadium series game at Ohio State, and he's not going to get to, which is a huge bummer for him. He's had an incredible breakout here.
You've got to keep your head up. That's a big blow to Columbus. They are in the midst of a playoff battle, and he has been their best player. He's been rock solid this season. He's really had a breakout season. That benefits the Rangers, who are doing anything they can to get back in this race.
Yeah, it does. The next one here, Brandon Saad, who obviously terminated his contract with St. Louis last week, signed with Las Vegas Golden Knights. 1 year, $1.5 million, prorated for where we are in the season. I know that was more than I thought too. You'd think, like, for a guy who's made his money and terminated the contract, he just goes out and make league min or something. But jumped into that lineup. He played in the third line with Howden and Mark Stone, so that he had some nice depth to this already pretty deep lineup.
Yeah, it's not fair. I feel like Vegas is loading up again. They're a dangerous team. Like, they will be there at the end. Who else in the Western Conference do you think will give them a run? Oilers, maybe? Dallas?
Colorado, Dallas, Winnipeg.
Vegas does it every single year. They get these vets. They get these free agents to come in and play on a team-friendly deal. They nail it at the trade deadline, and they're just going to be hard to play. Like, they get these guys who are so just made for playoff hockey. Brandon Saad is made for playoff hockey. Thomas Hertl is made for playoff hockey. Their big body, Dadonov, was made for it. You know what I mean? They might not be big regular season stars, and they are, but if it's a seven-game series and you got Brandon Saad and Hertl and Dadonov and these big-bodied guys bearing down on you time after time, it wears on you, and they're skilled to boot. It's crazy. It's a great move by them.
Yeah. Cool little stat here. Jonathan Quick became the first U.S. goalie to reach 400 wins last week. And I think we've already are at this point, but I think you have to say he's the best American goalie of all time now. Would you agree?
I think so. Yeah, for what he did, his whole career resume, not too much internationally, but he's a stud goaltender. Won the All-Star Game 2016, first prize. I think I was there. I saw that firsthand. Terrific goaltender. couldn't be happier for him. Gets it in New York, so good for him. Probably the best U.S. goalie since Ryan Miller.
Yeah, well, probably including him. He's got more wins than him. I know he was probably on better team. Poor Ryan Miller just spent so many years on bad teams. And I was looking at some of the, you know, comparables. So Quick has 400 now. Ryan Miller had 391. So Quick passed him pretty recently. Van Breesbroek had 374. And then I looked at some other stats too. Tom Barrasso has the most playoff wins among U.S. goalies with 61. Jonathan Quick is second with 49. And Quick has actually three cups. I forgot that. Obviously, the two in Las Vegas or Los Angeles, which are arguably the best goaltending performance in playoff history, especially that first one in 2012. Then he won as a backup with Vegas a couple of years ago. So, yeah, really nice resume there.
There you go.
First all right, the next one. Patrick Kane, first of all, incredible shootout goal last night. And that made him the most shootout goals in NHL history, which is a pretty cool little stat. And now the Red Wings have won 7 games in a row. They have the first wild card spot. They are ahead of the Bruins. They are ahead of the Lightning, some other teams now. We're going to have to spend some time next week's episode and do a standings update because things are changing so quickly. And I'm really glad to see the Red Wings, you know, heating up that race.
Yeah, Todd McClellan comes in, goes on a 7-game heater. Then they start to cool down and you figure, okay, they're coming down to earth. They're off the new coach bump. They turn around, another 7-game heater. So he sees. The question is, if they continue to play this way, Todd McClellan has to win the Jack Adams. Don't you think? Coming in and just turning around this languishing team, getting them to the playoffs. And I don't care what they do in the playoffs. Is it just to get there is a huge feat for him.
Yeah, that's a good question. What's the fewest games coached to win a Jack Adams?
I was thinking Craig Berube with St. Louis.
I was thinking that. Did he win in 2019?
He did, yeah. But I don't know. He's doing a great job there. Fantastic job in Detroit.
Barry Trotz won in 2019. Just looked it up. And then the last one here, Miro Heiskanen. Obviously, he had that knee-on-knee collision with Mark Stone last week. He had knee surgery. He's now turned month to month. So we don't know that he's going to even be back in the regular season. But this brings up another interesting point. Dallas made a trade, obviously, over the weekend. But if we're talking 12-plus weeks, that's going to push it pretty much to the start of the playoffs, which at that point, you use that LTIR and you go use that cap space to pick somebody up. And if you add him and Sagan together, you have almost $20 million in extra cap space. So they could make another big splash or two with that additional room.
Who do you get? Like, who is out there that's going to be available that makes that much money? That's the hard part because there's so many teams that are still in the race. So who do you get?
Yeah, I wonder, one of the names that keeps coming up, and you're going to laugh and say no, but do you think that any teams end up making a move for Seth Jones?
I think someone will. I absolutely will. Yeah. Seth, we give him a hard time, and that's solely because he makes so much money. He's a good player. He's a great defender. I think he was thrust into the spotlight in Chicago just because he signed that big $9.5 million deal. He's not a $9.5 million defenseman, but he's a good demon. I think a team would jump at him for sure, and he would fit Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, I'm looking at the daily faceoff list now. It's Brock Nelson's number one, Brandon Tanev number two, Reese DeLinen, Bowen Byram, Casey Mittelstadt, Ryan Lindgren, Dylan Cousins. So I don't see like a ton of like stars or any like pending. Brantanen was the one, and he wasn't even really on the trade market as far as we know. I don't think we see any major splashes. But again, it's still over a month away, so it's hard to say this far out.
There will be a lot of teams that will fall off in the next month to make it a little more clear. But there are some names. I don't know. I feel like if you're a team like Tampa Bay and you're struggling this season, things aren't working out, Julian Breezeball has never been one to sit on his hands. He would go out and make a move to help another team, but to further his window with Kucherov and Point and Hedman and those guys. Like, he did it with Sergachev. He's done it with Stamkos. If he thinks that this core isn't the right core, I feel like he would make a trade. So, I don't know. Keep an eye on Tampa Bay. I don't know anything that's speculating.
I'm really interested, obviously, in Boston, too. They've won 6 out of their last 10. They're playing okay, but they're still not in a playoff spot. Even with these wins, they're still out on the outside looking in. So I wonder what the next couple of weeks looks like. And if it doesn't work out, do you explore Carlo, Coyle, Marchand, you know, some of those good players that teams would want on their team. So we'll see what those guys do.
You'd get a third and a fourth and a fourth for those three guys.
Maybe. I think you get a little more than that. But
their last 10. That's not that good.
Yeah, but Marcus Pedersen just got first. So I think you get more than a third and a fourth for these guys. So we'll see.
Marcus Pedersen is a hell of a player. Carlo, I think, is your biggest trade chip if you want to get rid of him. But anyways, anything else, Tim?
No, there's a lot to cover, but we can save some stuff for next week. And I know are you waiting to figure out if you hit the road tonight or what?
Probably going to leave in the morning. I'm going to ball up in my bed and sleep for the next 8 hours and wake up in the morning and drive. So yeah, nice. Think of me when you guys are outside enjoying it, because it's a beautiful day. Get out there. Have some fun. Tim's still moving into his estate. We hope you guys enjoyed the show. We'll talk to you on Monday or Tuesday next week. Cheers, everybody.
Whether you're singing songs dressed as a traffic cone at the Ali Pali, roaring yourself hoarse on the first day of Cheltenham, or hugging a complete stranger after a 98th-minute win. At Virgin Bet, we always want you to have a great time without ever losing track of your betting. So whilst there's no such thing as a dead cert, it's a good bet will help you keep it fun and safe. Visit our safer gambling hub for more info. Virgin Bet, a good bet. Bet responsibly. 18+, gamblerware.org.